요.
Listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Nico Chiodi. I'm 15 years old, and I am homeschooled.
Hi, this is Michaela Montardi. I am 13 years old, and I am homeschooled as well.
This is Ben Barron. I'm 16 years old, and I go along with the rest of the group because I'm homeschooled too.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
So today
we're going to be talking about nonviolence, how and why it works, and other external forces on it.
And kind of opposed to violent protest also, yeah. But for me, I think it's kind of a very interesting topic because a lot of people would say support Martin Luther King and what he did, but then they also don't consider themselves pacifists. And I do agree with what he did, but I don't consider myself a pacifist. I'm about 90% pacifist, but not all the time.
I think a nonviolent protests are important for getting people who wouldn't be on your side on your side. If you think about Ferguson and the riots, and all of a sudden people don't agree anymore they think they now have a reason to say, oh, it should have happened that way. No, the riots are bad, so therefore the whole cause is bad. Whereas if it had been all peaceful protests, they wouldn't have had a chance to say that.
Yeah, and I think it seems to me, at least, nonviolence is sort of a tactic that doesn't really change the views of extremists, but it kind of wins over that wishy-washy middle majority. That's that the people who kind of change which side has the most people, But and then I think that's definitely an interesting tactic. And yeah, I mean, Gandhi, I'm very interested in him. It's all interesting.
It's very important. I think it's a very important discussion, but the only problem with that is that you get it's easy to look over them because they aren't doing anything violent. And so once you're heard, you may win them over, but you have to be heard first. And I think that's why people turn to violence first.
Yeah, and also, it's a nonviolent movement in some ways, I think, needs a violent opposition to it to get that attention and to kind of have that contrast to show people, that kind of bring that out. And I was just researching the Freedom Riders a little bit, and they were talking about how they didn't want anyone to get hurt. But if people do get hurt, that's almost a good thing, and that's almost what they want because that gets more attention to what they're doing, and that, creates that contrast.
Yeah, and even the people and the protesters who get hurt who are not violent, all of a sudden, they're the victims.
Yeah. And it kind of really brings that out. And I think, seeing just the they're just beating people with clubs, or police are doing all kinds of stuff, or just pepper spraying people that are just sitting there or something, or just trying to march somewhere. It really kind of brings it to a new level for people who might not be paying as much attention, or might just kind of turn on the news and not really listen to it, or not really be trying to evaluate all the different positions.
It reminds people, even who aren't part of the movement, that their freedom of speech is becoming, it's going away slightly by this happening.
Now, what's the
beatings, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's that quote from Martin Luther King, of course, that's injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere, and I think that's really true. And it's even if you might say, oh, it's okay, it's over in that country, or it's not near me, or it's not affecting me. No matter what, it's affecting you in some way, and it could always spread to you. You need to always be looking, even if it's not directly affecting you.
I
think it's interesting again that violence versus nonviolence, because sometimes I think you just kind of do have to resort to violence. And I'm not saying in things like, you know, the civil rights, but some people, like, you know, Hitler or something, you can't really reason with them. If they just want you all dead anyway, you not being nonviolent isn't really a useful a tactic that'll work, because they're just going to line you up against the wall and, you know, shoot you, basically. But I think it's something that really works for kind of these stressful situations where you have sort of two religions or races or whatever you want to, whatever kind of dynamic that is, where it's posed like that. Because, you know, with Martin Luther King was violent, or if that was a more violent situation, people would have just looked at him and kind of said, yeah, they're just confirming everything that I already believe.
Right.
And yeah, it's not, you need to challenge those views. And yeah, right. And that's, you know, you need, like Gandhi, you know, too.
You need to show them that you're better than what they think you are.
Yeah, yeah. And I think kind of a contrast there is just like, I'm very interested in Northern Ireland and the Troubles, and how, you know, the Catholics and versus the IRA and the Republicans versus the Loyalists, and then also the SAS and all of that. But it's sort of, I think they really should have kind of followed that route, and some people did. There were civil rights marches in Northern Ireland. There's a Bloody Sunday in 1972, not the Bloody Sunday that we know of, but the Irish Bloody Sunday. And that's kind of, you know, that was a peaceful demonstration. But I think they should have, more people should have followed that route, because it kind of just breeds that division more, and people just, you know, keep going back. It's a vicious cycle, I think, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's, yeah, it's, and I mean, that keeps, just keeps breeding, and there's still, you know, trouble in Ireland to this day. It's calmed down a lot, but with the RIRA and the Constabulary IRA, I think it is, there's, you know, that division, and you need to, that's also another reason I'm very interested in Nelson Mandela, is because he had that peace and reconciliation. You know, they were able to kind of come together after it and, yeah, heal the situation a bit.
Yeah, well, if you think about Palestine, the only things you ever hear about it are the violence. So yeah. What does that mean? Does that mean because there's violence you don't hear about the peaceful protests? Or is it violence is the only thing that's ever heard?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's all we want to hear.
Yeah.
When they're violent, you don't have to listen to them. It's, mm-hmm. They're not important.
Yeah, and it's easy to kind of just concentrate on that part of the movement, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, and that's yeah, definitely a troubling situation, you know? And I think that people need to kind of realize that even though these, you know, you're hearing about this in the news, or you're hearing about these violent protests, that there's probably 100 more peaceful protests or people who kind of support it in a peaceful way that you're just not hearing about, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I was reading a little bit about violent versus peaceful overthrows of mm-hmm. governments. And according to Erica Chenoweth, who had a TED Talk, The Success of Nonviolent Civil Resistance, mm-hmm. Success for nonviolent overthrows is roughly 50%, while violent overthrows is as low as like 21 or 22%.
Yeah.
And the nonviolent are more likely... The new government is more likely to be democratic and less likely to be overthrown in turn.
Yeah. I think, yeah, we can, I mean, just because I keep kind of going back to this as a metaphor, because this is something I'm more knowledgeable about, but with Northern Ireland, again, you have, if it's kind of, you have a violent movement, it tends to fracture off into lots of little groups that keep saying, we're the one true, you know, we're the successor to that one true group or whatever. Like, you know, you started off in Ireland with the Anglo-Irish War, which had the original IRA, and then in the 60s during the Troubles, the Anglo-Irish War was 1917, I believe, to 1922. I might be forgetting my dates there a little bit. But anyway, but then during the Troubles, they had the official IRA and the provisional IRA, and it kind of, and then the INLA, which is the Irish National Liberation Army, and it kind of fractured off into all these little groups vying for power, and they really didn't advance their cause at all, and they kind of kept making things worse, in my opinion. And it's, you know, they need to, they were conquered and divided, basically. And now I think you don't see that as much with peaceful protests.
Yeah.
Maybe to some extent, but not as much, you know.
It's not really fair to say that the people who are being the victims, who are generally having violence against them, in turn don't have to be violent. They have to be better than the people that are oppressing them. And it's tough because we're all humans. We're all equal. We don't want to be better than those who are oppressing us, but they have to be seen as human.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's a vicious circle, I think. And, I mean, just, there's definitely going to be some loss along the way. Like, you know, I'm just thinking about Gandhi in India. There were, you know, lots of people died getting there, and, you know, some of the massacres that happened at the hands of British troops. But you need that to happen. It's, you know, unfortunate, but it's a necessary, thing to get advance whatever you're working towards.
Someone has to be violent, and if it's the oppressors who are violent, then their side is generally not seen.
Yeah.
Generally, there are a few exceptions to that.
Yeah.
But not seen in the best light.
And it's kind of unfortunate, because I'd say that dynamic should almost be switched, because the people in power should have, you know, they have more of a responsibility, I think. It's, you know, I expect them to be better. I expect the U.S. government to behave better than, you know, just these white Southerners that are, you know, I expect the, and not even just Southerners, but just people during the civil rights, I expect, you know, the people in power to behave better, even though it kind of ends up turning the opposite thing happens, you know, the people protesting, yeah.
And I think it's interesting how we often forget about the violent side of the 1960s civil rights, which it's actually, it's almost good in a way, but it's also bad. But I think because we forget about it, it makes it seem wonderful, which is a good thing. It should seem great, but also at the same time, you're forgetting all those people who tried their best, and they just did it in the wrong way, possibly. Mm-hmm. How can we say hindsight is 100% accurate, right?
Yeah.
But we forget about them. We aren't taught about them, and it's like their voices are lost to history, mm-hmm. almost.
Yeah, and I think that is dangerous, because you need to kind of examine it in full, because then you'll start, you know, people. If you don't know that, okay, yeah, there were also these violent protests, or it kind of the whole dynamics of the situation that can maybe lead you to false conclusions, and it makes it easy to sort of say that, oh, you know, this great thing happened back in the past, and the civil rights was all, you know, it was great, but then we need a leader like Martin Luther King. It's kind of easy to look at it as an event that happened.
Right.
Instead of these people are doing that, and it's not, you know, anyone can do that. It's not it is an event in history, but it's not like something you have to wait for.
And it's not something that's still going on, as many people view it.
Yeah. I think it's very important to pay attention to leaders like Martin Luther King, and, you know, pay attention to that. And kind of, you know, I do think that, you know, we owe them respect and acknowledgement, but then on the other hand, they were just sort of the figurehead. It's easy to concentrate on them, whereas we should also be thinking about, you know, all the people who just marched and, you know, you've never heard of, but they got hit with a brick, or all, you know, they lost their job, maybe
smashed into a wall by a fire hose.
Yeah, you know, all kinds of stuff. We do need to acknowledge that these leaders did great things, but it wasn't just them. They were just able to mobilize people. And it's easy to concentrate on them. And, you know, we obviously can't name everyone involved in the civil rights and have a day for every single one of them. But then, in a way, we almost should, because, you know, they were just as important as, every leader out there, basically. Because they were just, you know, they were putting their body on the line like the rest of them.
to take a break, musical break, go ahead and just say that.
We're going to play some music now.
Down by the riverside.
Down by the riverside.
To Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
That song you just heard was Down by the Riverside by Kim and Reggie Harris. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day with Nico Chiodi,
Michaela,
Ben Barron.
If you like what you hear and want to join us in the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975.
Martin Luther King Jr. was Baptist and sang in the church choir when he was younger. Originally, he didn't believe many of Christianity's claims, such as the bodily resurrection of Jesus, which he dismissed during Sunday school when he was 13. Later, he decided that the Bible has many profound truths which one cannot escape. In 1954, King became a pastor at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, at 25 years old. His main influences were Jesus Christ and the Christian Gospels, which he quoted often. His faith was also affected by the ideas of loving your neighbor as yourself, loving God above all, and loving your enemies. In one 1967 sermon, King said, quote, "Before I was a civil rights leader, I was a preacher of the gospel. This was my first calling, and it still remains my greatest commitment. You know, actually all that I do in civil rights, I do because I consider it a part of my ministry. I have no other ambitions in life but to achieve excellence in the Christian ministry. I don't plan to run for any political office. I don't plan to do anything but remain a preacher. And what I'm doing in this struggle, along with many others, grows out of my feeling that the preacher must be concerned about the whole man." In comparison, Malcolm X was Muslim. At age 20, he was arrested for breaking and entering. While in prison, his brothers and sisters wrote letters to him regarding the Nation of Islam, a quite new religious movement at the time. The Nation of Islam advocated black self-reliance and the eventual return of black people to Africa. Malcolm X showed little interest in the movement until his brother Reginald wrote to him, "Malcolm, don't eat any more pork and don't smoke any more cigarettes. I'll show you how to get out of prison." Malcolm did, and when Reginald described the principles of the Nation of Islam, including the idea that white people are devils, the former supposed all relationships he had had with white people were invalid and had been corrupted by greed and hatred. He later wrote, "Months passed without my even thinking about being imprisoned. In fact, up to then, I had never been so truly free in my life." Malcolm became a member of the Nation of Islam and preached black supremacy and segregation. In March of 1964, he left the Nation of Islam. After a trip to Africa and the Middle East, he returned to the USA and founded Muslim Mosque Incorporated and the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Do you guys have any comments?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting comparison. And at least from what I know, I don't really agree with what Malcolm X said in his earlier life, because I don't think, you know, going back to Africa, kind of the separation really works, because it seems to me that, you know, we'll never really learn that we're all just people if we don't kind of all hang out with each other, and we need to, integration is really kind of a key goal, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting, and we do need to, the more we're segregated, the more we hate each other.
No.
That's very
true. As we've seen from probably from history. But yeah, I think it's also easy to dismiss Malcolm X because he was Muslim. Oh, he was Muslim, so therefore he's violent.
No.
And that's also I mean, he was Muslim and he was violent, but that's not necessarily why.
Yeah.
Right.
His own views may have been no matter what religion he was in, he would have had those same views. And but again, you don't hear much about him anyway.
Yeah. And I think it is interesting because towards, and I think it was 1964, maybe 1965, very shortly before his death, he actually went on a tour of Africa in the Middle East, and he came back and he disowned the Nation of Islam, and actually converted to I believe it was Sunni.
Yes, yeah. Sunni Islam.
Yeah, and he kind of went back on a lot of things he said and said, you know, I was sort of a puppet, and I think that's very interesting, that change that happened. And we see some of that in Martin Luther King, not as dramatic, I think, but he kind of changed some of his attitudes towards the end of his life too, I think, because when he started speaking out more against the Vietnam War and the Poor People's Campaign, and then he went from saying Negro to saying black sometimes. There are actually, which march it was at now, I'm forgetting the name. But anyway, yeah, at the because at the beginning of the march he was saying Negro, and then they kind of started firing, the police started firing tear gas shells at the crowd, and towards the end of that he was saying Black, and I'm not quite sure what that signifies, but I think that's an interesting kind of, to see the shift in both of their ideas and where they're coming from, sort of.
Some people say that without religion you cannot have morality. I honestly think, I do not agree with that, but what do you guys think? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I kind of see that as, that's just kind of an odd comment. Yeah, I don't see, I see them as two separate entities, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, your religion doesn't really affect, I think, exactly your morality, really. It's sort of your person and what you get out of that religion. At least it seems to me, you know, because I've met very nice Christians. I've met very not so nice Christians. To be blunt about it. And then I've met some very nice Muslims, and you know, they've invited me into their home. We've had lunch together. It's been actually helping tutor right now a Somali refugee, and she's a very nice person. Her entire family's very nice. But I think you got to look at it as the individual. And I think that's in some ways what Martin Luther King is saying a lot is, you know, don't judge a man by the color of his skin, but by his character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say?
Well, I agree with most of what you said. I think religion is, a lot of it's general enough that people and pastor take out of it what they want to see and what they want to hear. And so if you're going to be immoral anyway, then it's easy to wrap it around what you want your supremacist views, whether they be white or Black, or any type, whether it's religion or race. It's easy to wrap that, but it's also, as we see from Martin Luther King, easy to say we're all equal. It doesn't matter. And so I think that really depends on, like I said, it wasn't that he was Muslim that made him violent. It was he was violent and he used his Islam to help people to work with him.
Right. And we've got to keep in mind the Nation of Islam that doesn't mean all of Islam. It was just one part of it.
Nation of Islam doesn't refer to it's not like saying Christianity right. or Islam. It's like saying,
it's like the Nation of Islam was just one section. Like,
yeah, it's
not
just
Christianity as opposed to
Baptism.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Lutherans. It's just a sect out of a much larger, more diverse group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think that's really, we need to look at that, and I'm very interested in how they change their views over time, and just kind of how devoted both of them were to what they were doing. Because I heard that apparently after Martin Luther King was shot, in autopsy, they said he had the heart of a 60-year-old because he was, basically he was so, he had been taxing himself so much, not having enough rest and just working so, you know, it's such a stressful thing. His life had been threatened. He's always traveling, all of this stuff, that it had taken such a toll on him physically, and you know, we can it's probably hard to imagine mentally that's you know, how that affects your views and how that kind of changes.
Yeah, and the Negro to Black may have been a slip.
Yeah,
he may have thought of it both ways, and then when he was, as they were as the stress increased, he may have switched to Black without even realizing what he was saying.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting about how I think about just what we can, the integration versus non-integration. And I was just listening to an interview recently with a rapper I listened to a bit called Killer Mike. He had a interview on CNN, and they were discussing Ferguson with him. And he was kind of saying, and I think this is, I agree with this, that they asked him, what do you think we can do right now to stop this from happening again? And he said, and he's a Christian, and he said that just go to church with someone, go to a new church, go, you know, make friends with someone who doesn't look like you, and just that mixture of finding other people and, you know, just mixing with different groups and trying new things. And I think that's kind of a way to get towards equality and just a better place, you know. Yeah.
Well, if you think about, with the Palestine-Israel, I've heard people say, well, you know, it's not the problem with two peoples. It's a lot more than that. But then you look at some of the videos and you think, if you love each other enough that you're willing to admit your own faults,
yeah,
that can change things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what diversity is, being with other people, finding the humanity in them.
Yeah. And not to sound like a cliche here, but I think we kind of need to keep pushing ourselves out of our comfort zones and just keep, you know, doing something that you're kind of uncomfortable with, and maybe going and mixing with other groups politically or racially or religiously, whatever it may be. But just, you know, keep going and keep trying to, you know, just be friends with them and try to make friends with them, even if you disagree on these subjects. I try to do that, I know, and I'm I'd say left politically, but then I also have a lot of friends who are Tea Partiers and kind of very far on the other side of that. So
doesn't mean you can't be friends. I mean, yeah. I have friends, you know, I don't agree with them on some things, but right. I mean,
yeah, and
sorry, continue.
Yeah, and no, that's fine. But I think that's really what everyone needs to be trying to do, is just kind of mixing everything up and just, you know, keep getting and recognize that, okay, yeah, I may disagree with you on whatever list of items it may be, but you're still a good person and I can still be your friend, you know, or I can still,
right.
Yeah, and not to say that you shouldn't, and, you know, if someone's doing something wrong or, you know, picking on someone or doing whatever or doing something unjust, that you shouldn't stand up or shouldn't say, like, no, you're wrong and I'm going to fight you on it, and we'll not literally fight or whatever the case
may be. Hopefully not.
Yeah, yeah, non-violence, of course. But not that you shouldn't, you know, should back down, but just to try and recognize that the humanity in the other people.
You can disagree with people and still be their friends.
Yeah.
And you can have arguments with them about things like racial.
Yeah.
And you can still be their friends.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, yep. You shouldn't back down just because they are your friends.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We're going to play Phil Oakes' When I'm Gone.
There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone, and you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't feel the flowing of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone. My pen won't pour a lyric line when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't breathe the bracing air when I'm gone. And I can't even worry about my cares when I'm gone. Won't be asked to do my share when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be running from the rain when I'm gone. And I can't even suffer from the pain when I'm gone. can say who's to praise and who's to blame when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone, and the evenings and the mornings will be one when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. Can't add my name into the fight while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone, and I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I won't know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it. I guess I'll have to do it. Guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Down in Alabama, 1955. Not many of us here today are then alive. A young Baptist preacher, little bus boy cop, show the way for a brand new day without firing a shot. Don't say it can't be done, the battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. Oh, those must have been an exciting 30 years. Young heroes, young heroines, there was laughter, there were tears. Students sitting down at lunch counters, children dancing in the street. To think it all started with Rosa refusing to give up her seat. Don't say it can't be done, the battle's just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. You can sing this with us, I'll give you the words. Don't say it can't be done.
Don't say it can't be done.
Good. The battle's just begun.
The battle's just begun.
Take it from Dr. King.
Take it from Dr. King.
Let's sing those three lines.
Don't say it can't be done.
Good.
The battle's just begun.
Take it from Dr. King. You too can learn to sing.
You too can learn to sing.
So drop the gun.
So drop the gun.
Now you know the whole chorus.
Don't say it can't be done.
The battle's just begun.
Take it from Dr. King.
You too can learn to sing. So drop the gun. Song, song, song kept him going and going. They didn't know all the millions of seeds that they were sowing. They were singing on marches, even singing in jail. Songs gave them courage to believe they would not fail. Don't say it can't be done.
The
that had just begun. Take it from Black to King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. We sang Ba-da-ba-ma 1955. But since September 11th, may we wonder, will this world survive? But if the world learns the lessons from Dr. King, we can survive, we can,
we will!
And so we sing,
don't say can't be done,
the battle just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun. You're singing better and better and better, put them together. I can't die. The battle just begun. Take it from Dr. King, you too can learn to sing, so drop the gun.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
That song you just heard was Take It From Dr. King by Pete Cedar. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with
Nico Chiodi,
Ben Barron,
and Michaela Montardi. If you like what you hear and want to join in on the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975, and please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
So, I really like this one quote from Gandhi, and it's, the essence of nonviolence, violent technique is that if it seeks to liquidate antagonism, that it seeks to liquidate antagonisms, but not the antagonists. And I think that's very important. I think that's really what nonviolence is all about. It yeah. makes the people who are racist or whatever ist. Whatever prejudice they have, it seeks to tell them they're wrong without wounding their pride. Yeah. Say, you're wrong, but it's not really your fault.
Yeah, well, and I'm not even sure I'd say without hurting their pride, because I think that could be a sort of look what you did, but without going and doing the same thing they're doing.
Right, I mean, it might make the violent side of the argument or whatever conflict is going on, you know, rethink what they're doing.
Because I'd almost say that it's actually maybe out to hurt their pride as opposed to them. There's kind of that contrast there.
But also, pride is a very powerful thing, and a lot of people live by it. Mm-hmm. So if I say, you're wrong, you're evil, you've been doing all these awful things, you don't want to agree with me, do you? Because that makes you a bad person, and you don't want to be a bad person, unless, of course, some people do. But you don't want to be a bad person. And so they say, look what's been done to us. It's not you who did it, but it's a lot of people. You didn't realize you were doing it, but it was done. Yeah. You should change that. And I think that's what it is. It's putting it on the group instead of one particular person. It makes it easy to say, I was wrong, we were wrong. You say we were wrong, not I was wrong.
And also I think kind of it goes to say that even if you did do this, we're sort of, if you change, we're going to forgive you. Because kind of with Nelson Mandela, it is, you know, they brought, with the Reconciliation Commissioner, I'm forgetting the exact name here, but they kind of, you know, they brought the each side of, you know, people who had, you know, like, killed each other or killed, you know, if, say, you killed my brother or something, they brought those people together and they just got it out in the open instead of letting it kind of, I think, stew and sort of ferment in the kind of group tribalism or herd mentality that we sort of get into with some of these more violent things. And they kind of just say, yeah, this happened. Let's move forward from it. Where, you know, it's not okay, but we can't just, you know, it's not going to help things to sit and stew on it for the next 10 generations. We need to get over this.
Right.
Yeah. You know, if you think about the gay rights thing and how much it's changed in the last 10, 15 years,
yeah.
And very few, I don't know of any, but I'm sure there were some, were actually violent protests.
Mm-hmm.
There were the gay pride marches. There was the spreading of information. There weren't a whole lot of leaders.
Yeah.
It was a lot of people saying, listen to us. If you think about in history back to, you know, maybe the 60s or even the 80s, but especially before that, they just didn't exist.
Yeah.
You have to go back all the way into ancient times sometimes, and they just didn't exist. And so when they spread the media, said, we're here, there are a lot of us, and you aren't going to change us, and we're not going to change you, people say, oh, well, I could see that happening. And all of a sudden, the spreading of information means more rights. In Pennsylvania, marriage equality.
Yeah.
And 19, well, quite a few states, marriage equality.
Yeah.
So.
And I think there was an awareness of before, you know, the 60s or whenever you want to kind of set as the start date for this, but there was an awareness that, you know, that was a thing out there, that there were gay people, but it was sort of, it was something you didn't talk about. It was like,
right.
No, let's cover this up and not, you know,
right.
talk about it. This
yeah.
is like something. And there's a, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example here. I'm forgetting the name now. But there was a playwright in the 1890s where he was actually put in prison and died there because he was gay. And I mean, there was that kind of thing of, you know, we're not allowed to talk about it. And I think it's not. Exactly. I mean, maybe I think more people probably are aware that it exists because some people probably just it went straight over their heads. But I think it's more of this an open discussion, or we're recognizing that, okay, this is something, this is an issue now, instead of like, oh, let's just pretend this didn't happen.
Right.
Right. But I mean, if you think about like the work, especially like in the 1800s, mm-hmm. the working class people. Unless they had a family member who was, what did they care about it? They didn't know about the people being put in prison. It's not something you would advertise. We just put a gay person in prison.
No.
So I don't think they really thought about it. And now you see it all over the internet. You see it on books.
Yeah.
You see all sorts of things, and it's in your life now.
Yeah.
And you think about it.
Yeah. And I guess, I think I agree with you, but I think that's kind of part of the... an extension of it getting out in the public more, or it getting out and being talked about more, because now it is part of your life, because you talk about it just like, you know, you would like, okay, what's for dinner tonight? Or it's just kind of a getting to be more of a, less of a, this is some weird sort of issue, and more of a sort of day-to-day thing.
I know an associate of Dr. King's was actually homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people were protesting that King actually said, you know what, I'm not going to work with you anymore.
Yeah.
Because so many people were demanding, no, he's gay, you can't work with him.
Yeah.
You know?
That's sad, but I think that is interesting to look at kind of, we tend to, and rightfully so in some ways, but we tend to glorify these people and kind of say, oh, they were just this perfect person, like, you know, Martin Luther King or whoever you want to pick.
George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. I mean, they're everywhere in history.
Yeah.
Christopher Columbus.
Yeah. we tend to kind of say, like, they were perfect, you know, and they did this great thing.
They could do no wrong.
Yeah, and whereas I think it's almost, I think it's more... it's better to their it does them more honor to their memory to kind of admit, yeah, they weren't perfect and they kind of screwed this up and they did these bad things, but they were human just like all of us and they were able to get this far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, they did some bad things, they did some good things, but like you said, when it comes down to it, I mean, they're still just human.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that can kind of be inspiring, too, to say, like, they're not just this thing stuck up on a pedestal, but they're actually a person like me, and maybe I should go out there and actually try and make a difference, too.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I know Abraham Lincoln, actually, and he and I, you know, I think we would all agree that emancipation was a good thing, hopefully, but that he actually... he ordered the largest public execution in U.S. history. It was a Native American... I forget what state it was in now, but they attacked, you know, some settlers after they had broken a deal, and because, you know, we were taking their land and doing all kinds of bad treaty stuff. But anyway, they were captured after kind of retaliating for this, and he actually, I believe it was 18 of them were all publicly hanged.
Wow.
And it's sort of, and that, I kind of find that, like, you really shouldn't have done that. You know, that's right. not, I don't see that as a good thing. But then to get, say, like, okay, yes, he did do that, but then to go on and acknowledge, yeah, but he also did all this other good stuff. It kind of does more credit to their memory, I think.
Right. Yeah. Or at least it doesn't necessarily do more credit to their memory, but their legacy continues.
Yeah.
People doing things in their name, in the name of Martin Luther King, that kind of thing. It makes them human. It inspires us, and their legacy, if not their credibility.
Yeah.
Right.
Is saved.
Yeah. But. Yeah, and then to kind of go back to Abraham Lincoln, I think that's, you know, and to look at all of Malcolm X and then Martin Luther King and kind of look at all of these people and to realize that they were really putting themselves on the line. I mean, all of them
right.
were killed, you know.
Right.
Yeah, all assassinated, basically. And it's, you know, this is not something that they went into lightheartedly. I remember I just heard recently that apparently Martin Luther King was always talking about leaving the movement, and he was kind of saying, you know, because, you know, he had a family, he had kids, and,
right.
you know, he was kind of, and it really took a toll on him, and right. but he kind of, that was his life, you know, and that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I was actually discussing this recently with someone. I mean, once you start the idea and get it to spread so that other people are in this movement, then it kind of become, if it's bigger than yourself, then, I mean, obviously, I mean, they all knew they were taking a risk.
Yeah.
A huge risk, especially Dr. King, but they did it anyway.
Right.
That's the point. That's just what makes it so inspiring, is that they knew that they were putting themselves in danger, but they did it anyway because of how important this was.
And actually, you know, after JFK's assassination, I heard about, because, you know, Martin Luther King had multiple death threats by that point, and I think his house had been bombed once. And anyway, I heard that apparently after that, the mentality of him and the people around him was, if they can get the president, we don't really stand that much of a chance. You know, they can get us if they can, you know, managed to get through the Secret Service and all of this, people who want to, you know, who resist this, then Martin Luther King isn't really that much of a
right.
effort.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe that was what inspired his speech the day before he died.
Yeah.
Because he really did believe that they were going to get him.
Yeah. That's kind of always kind of mind-boggling to me, and also very inspiring to think of that kind of knowledge of, okay, this is what we're going into, but just to go ahead with that anyway. And I think that's, I mean, maybe something we should try and take out of Martin Luther King Day, is to kind of recognize that and say, okay, yeah, this may be dangerous or whatever, but we should just keep going with it anyway, and because it's the right thing to do.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And I think also I'm very interested in, I'm actually a Civil War reenactor, Union side, of course, none of that dirty gray Southern stuff. But anyway, but also I think John Brown is a very interesting kind of case, because whether it's kind of, I can see different arguments for it, whether he was kind of crazy or whether he wasn't crazy, and if he was he still doing the right thing? And
I'd have to say he probably was pretty crazy, but I think he was doing the right thing. Maybe. At that point, I think armed rebellion, civil war, either whatever it was, I think it was going to be violent to free the slaves. The Southerners were holding on, and not just the Southerners, but mostly Southerners were holding on to their slaves so tightly that I think it was going to have to be violent.
Yeah. But I would kind of disagree with you on that point, actually. I'm not set on this position, but I'm not entirely sure that I would label him as crazy, because from some of the research I've done, I think he knew, in my opinion at least, and this is very debatable, but it's just, my opinion, but that he kind of, he probably knew that this wasn't going to succeed, that he wasn't going to, be able to go along the Appalachians and have slave risings and then overthrow the South, but or the slaveholders, but that it kind of, I think he knew he was going into this as a martyr, as a sort of spark, from what I've heard, because he left maps and kind of in his house, and where they knew he was, with southern towns marked off of all his battle routes, and they published that in the southern newspapers, and that got all of them up in arms and kind of a fever, like they were planning on attacking our town. So I think he might have, and I mean this is just my opinion, but I think he might have known going into it that this is might be how it ends up, and whether he thought it was going to be a civil war or what, he might. I think he might have been going towards, I'm going to try and get other people to get, up in arms about this and to be more informed or whatever it might be, about this subject.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, but isn't it kind of discouraging almost to the slaves? I mean, if he was hoping that they would rise up, and I don't know whether he was hoping that or not, but isn't it kind of discouraging to show this Rise Rebellion where they all get slaughtered?
to an extent, but then you have the Southern kickback and with Fort Sumter and kind of all of that, and it starts stirring things up, and that's really,
forcing Lincoln's hand,
kind of. Yeah, and I think, you can say Fort Sumter was the start of the Civil War, but I think in some ways it should almost be John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry, because that's, in my opinion, really, it was probably a civil war probably was going to be coming anyway, but I think that's really when it determined how and when it was going to come.
And why it was being fought.
Yeah.
It wasn't all about slaves.
No, definitely not. I mean, there was a lot more going on, and I think that's true in every war. It is, like, we like to say, oh, it was fought over this reason, like, oh, World War II was fought against the Nazis, or, whatever war you might pick, or, Civil War is fought against slavery, but there's a whole multitude of other reasons, and it's far more complex than just,
one reason.
Yeah,
they might put it in a history textbook or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to test that way, but I think it's kind of dangerous almost to label war, oh, we're fighting this for this reason.
Right.
And, I think that's true with the modern wars, too, is we shouldn't just be saying, oh, we're just fighting this against terrorists because they, because of 9/11. I think it's more complicated than that. I'm not saying that isn't a reason, but I think we need to pay attention to that, the fact that there's lots of other things going on here.
Right. Yeah.
Our last song is going to be Ann Feeney's Have You Been to Jail for Justice? That's all the time we have. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. Up next is more music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. Streaming Justice will continue until midnight at slbradio.org. Up next, we have Alexis, London, Marna, and Alona.